Second down, 30, going deep. And he's got his receiver, Adams! Slicing in for the touchdown.
Pulse of the Pack Podcast.
Play in big running room. And headed to the end zone is Aaron Jones.
Aaron Jones.
Give that man the ball.
Pulse of the Pack Podcast.
You want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Pulse of the Pack. Here we are again, the 4-1 Green Bay Packers, another victory Monday. And the second show in the history of this new format. I am your host this evening. I am Jacob Westendorf of Packer Report, and I am here with you to discuss the 4-1 Green Bay Packers. We also, just so you guys know, we heard your comments, we heard your discussions regarding some of our equipment and things of that nature. So we're working on that. I am working currently on a new computer and also upgrading the internet connection. So the video portion of this program should be up to speed very quickly, and we're excited about that. But joined with me in this case, he could not be in front of a computer tonight, so we only have him on an audio side of things, so I'm sorry if you don't want to stare at me for too long, but we committed to this format, so this is what we have to do, is Jason Perrone. Jason, Cheesehead TV live by day, Pulse of the Pack by night, just another day in the office for you.
It was another vintage day in the office for me, because as those of you who follow me on Twitter know, I was in full upbeat lollipop mode today as the Packers built up a nice little 31-3 and then 31-10 and you know the story. Jake, you bore the brunt of my panic attack, which is very easy to trigger. But I am thrilled, absolutely thrilled, to be talking about a 4-1 Packers team. They desperately needed to bounce back after that Eagles victory. And I use the word desperately is obviously way too much hyperbole, but doing very well. Very excited to be talking about a win, a big, big win. And the second home of Packers quarterback Aaron Charles Rodgers. I guess that meme that showed the owner of the Packers and then some old guy in a suit is true then, Jake.
Yeah, that is. My daughter, after the game, asked who those people were on the screen, and I told her, yeah, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys and some old creepy guy in a suit, and that's where we're at. The Green Bay Packers have beaten the Dallas Cowboys again. I've got to say, Jason, I strongly prefer doing victory shows instead of the shows like the ones we had to do last week, so it's a lot more fun this way, and let's dive right in. Real quick, let's take a trip around the NFC North. The Detroit Lions had a bye this week. So they did not play. They will remain in second place. The Minnesota Vikings traveled to New York, and they have had much more luck than the other teams that have gone to New York from Minnesota this previous weekend. And for those of you that aren't quite catching that, the Minnesota Twins are down 0-2 to the New York Yankees. And as you watch this, I assume on a Monday, it ends, and we want the Houston Astros. But that's not why we're here. So the Minnesota Vikings did beat the New York Giants 28-10, and the Chicago Bears lost in London to the Oakland Raiders, which is, I don't know, I would never bet on a game in London. It's just crazy to me. The Raiders must be better than I thought they were. I'm not quite sure what the deal is there. Jason, any thoughts on the division rivals today? Did you catch any of those games by chance?
I didn't catch much of the Vikings game. Obviously, the Giants are who they are, and they're not going to do us any favors, so hopefully they don't do us hopefully they do us a huge favor in December when the Packers travel to New York. But I did happen to catch a little bit of the game in London between the Raiders and the Bears, and it was unfortunately what's becoming a theme in the NFL is the officiating taking over for the wrong reasons, and that game came down to a couple calls late that could have changed the outcome. The Bears were almost the beneficiary of another call by the officials that was controversial. And then you had former Packer Trevor Davis, who fumbled near the goal line and all kinds of fun stuff going on there. But the Raiders were able to hang on and get a victory. And so we definitely got a little bit of separation from Chicago, and even less will we have to. And Jake, I know you live in Illinois, so you're going to appreciate this. But even less will we have to listen to Bears fans try and claim that they are tied with the Packers for the NFC North lead.
Yeah, that bullshit got awful quiet pretty quickly after losing at noon today. I did get one message saying, oh, well, it's not a big deal because you guys are going to lose to Dallas anyways. And, well, as we're going to dive into right now, they did not do that. The Green Bay Packers won 34-24 at Jerry World over the Dallas Cowboys. And, Jason, I know you love trends, and I know you love everything like that. And here you go. The Packers have never lost in Dallas at AT&T Stadium with Aaron Rodgers as the quarterback. And when Matt Flynn played quarterback, they have the biggest comeback win in franchise history in that stadium. And, of course, won Super Bowl 45 at AT&T Stadium. So I believe it was Andy Herman. Forgive me if I'm misremembering that, but he dubbed it Lambeau Field South. It might have been Jake Morley. I don't know. I'm getting my Packer Report colleagues lost in my head. And while I have your attention on Packer Report, regardless, you guys can see the hat that I'm wearing. This thing's really sick. So what we're doing is a promotion where you can get 2 months for $1. So go ahead and I will tweet out the link as soon as this show ends. And I will make sure that you guys are able to find that very quickly. But again, not here for the promotions. We're here to talk football. Jason, the Packers got off to a really good start. We had one surprise in that Kevin King was declared active, and it was kind of assumed he wasn't going to play. And that was a boost to the defense. And Kevin King finished the day. I want to start with him because it was a game he wasn't supposed to play in and has a groin injury, ends up getting a knee injury. It sounds like he's going to be okay from that standpoint. But Aaron Rodgers made a point to mention him and Za'Darius Smith in his press conference after the game was over and said that those guys were warriors. It was admirable to see them play through pain, all those sorts of things. Kevin King had a really good day today, I thought. I mean, obviously he gave up some catches. It's not like he's not a shutdown corner, if you will. He's not Darrell Revis. But I think he's had a really good season outside of the one game against Denver. He had one interception today. He dropped another one. So, I mean, if he catches that interception, you're looking at a potentially really nice day for the Packers' his third-year cornerback. And the Packers are definitely going to need more plays like that down the stretch. But, Jason, let's start with King. How surprised were you, one, that he played, and two, that he played as well as he did?
Well, it's becoming a regularity for King. It's becoming a regular thing for him, which is awesome. I mean, it's a great thing to see. Once again, the frustrating thing is that he just can't seem to stay on the field very often. If he's not coming out of a game and coming back into it, he's not playing at all. I mean, he was doubtful at one point. He got upgraded to questionable on Saturday, so that was kind of a surprise. But his presence in this game ended up being needed. It was one of those things where it's like, okay, they have King out there, but they're probably not going to be able to play him much because he had an injury. The soft tissue problems just continue to pop up for him. You know, if it's not one thing, it's another. He could have had the two picks. I mean, he's becoming a very important part of this defense. So hopefully whatever he had today, which I think ended up at the end being an ankle, it was after the interception. I think he had an ankle. Hopefully it doesn't end up being too serious, and it's something that he's going to be able to push through. The Packers have an extra day of rest before they have to host the Lions on Monday night next week. What can you say? King had to show up and have a big day today, though, because the Packers' best cornerback, and I still believe this to be true, Jaire Alexander, struggled a little bit today in coverage. He had a tough assignment in Amari Cooper, and there were just a couple times that Alexander ended up getting beat. Those are things that young players are going to experience and go through. He might want to be an all-pro player and be a Pro Bowl player, and I think he will be, but there's going to be times where he's going to get humbled a little bit. And so in the coverage, he got beat a little bit, and then his tackling was a little suspect. Cost the Packers a touchdown on one play, I thought. So thank goodness Kevin King had the day that he did. You know, then, and I joke, there's a reason why these guys aren't wide receivers, and that's okay. You know, they're not known for their great hands, but King did have a great day. That was good to see. I mean, it quiets all the people who claim that this was a wasted draft pick. Clearly, when Kevin King is healthy, he's a huge asset to the defense.
Yeah, and that's nothing new to any of us. Anybody who's listening to the show knows how we feel about Kevin King. That's basically that. If he's healthy, he's a very good player. Problem is, those days have been few and far between. But that being said, today he was good enough to go. He went and made an impact on the game. And you mentioned Jaire Alexander. Rough day at the office. The nice part about this defense and this team is they pick each other up. And that's something that we haven't seen a whole lot. Usually it was, if the best players don't play well, then they have no chance. Whereas now, some of the best players didn't play that great, and they still won the game. So that was nice to see. Go through the first half a little bit. The Packers are shorthanded on offense, and we knew that all week. Davante Adams seemed very unlikely to play at the very minimum. And turns out he was ruled out on Friday, so it wasn't even a question of him to be able to play. We'll see if he's good to go in 8 days when the Packers take on the Lions on Monday Night Football. But for now, Adams wasn't able to play, and the Packers – They kind of do what they do in the first half. They are outscoring teams in the first quarter this year by a score of 42-3. And the three came in week one against the Chicago Bears. So I think that's crazy that they're doing as well as they are getting off to a fast start. So to start there, Jason, again, when you don't have your best guys, it's encouraging to get off to a good start. And secondly, it was also nice to see Aaron Jones, my goodness, have a day. And we'll talk plenty more about him as this show progresses. But the first drive and really the first quarter as a whole, being able to just jump ahead early and put the Cowboys in a position. People ask, how are you going to stop Zeke Elliott? Well, one way to do it is what the old Indianapolis Colts used to do. And that is jump out to a lead, let those pass rushers, Freeney and Mathis in those days, get after the quarterback, and the other team can't run the ball. You can't run the ball and establish the run when you're down by 14 points. And that's how the Packers really did take Zeke Elliott out of the game early in the – I mean, Zeke had a few plays here or there, but I joked on Pack-A-Day earlier in the week that that Zeke Elliott lives to give me nightmares, and he has ever since he was at Ohio State. And that didn't happen today. And a lot of reason was because of the way they jumped ahead early. Tell me a little bit, Jason, how important was it for them to get off to that start? Not, I mean, they've done that all year, but in this game specifically, how big of a deal was it for them to get off to a fast start?
Well, it's good for them to get off to a fast start anytime they can, because then it gives them a buffer. We saw that obviously play out huge in week two against the Vikings when they got off to a huge start in the first quarter and then didn't score again. So that's always ideal. Anytime you can put yourself more in the driver's seat of a game, that's what you want to have. Zeke ran well when he did get more carries. I mean, I have to think if Dallas keeps that game close and it's Zeke all day long, I have to wonder how that turns out, because the Packers, he's a great back, and the Packers didn't really seem to have a great answer for him, you know. But I like the fact that the defensive front answered the call of being more physical. They got out physicaled by the Eagles, and against a good Dallas Cowboys offensive line, they may not be what they were before, and there was no Tyron Smith. Now Tyron Smith is more of a pass protector, you know, in run support and in run blocking. His absence really hasn't meant much as in terms of Zeke Elliott. Zeke has still had some pretty good days without the starting left tackle out there, but Green Bay held the point. They maintained their gaps a little bit better. I mean, Zeke's going to get his yards. He's one of the best backs in the league. So, you know, you try to stop the best player on any team or at any position, you're not going to do it for 60 minutes. So that was big. So by playing well offensively, you help out your defense. It's almost like having a 12th defender out there or having another defense out there by saying, hey, you can't beat us because you're not playing. You're on the sideline while the offense is scoring. They're eating up clock. And then you put the ball in the hands of Dak Prescott, which, you know, as we mentioned already, talking about Kevin King and the day that he had and the number of turnovers that the Packers had, you know, ended up obviously being the right call, because that played right into the hands of what the Packers wanted to do and the kind of day that they had. These youngsters stepping up. Chandon Sullivan has a big interception. Will Redmond had a great day. You know, a lot of those guys that needed to step up and have a big day did. All of that is, you know, all of that started with the fact that they took the ball out of 21's hands. And I'm telling you right now, Zeke Elliott, he might be one of the only backs in this league, maybe Saquon Barkley, who are really worth everything that they've wanted in terms of their value, their worth, their contract. You know, do you pay running backs anymore in this day and age in the NFL? They say don't pay running backs. Zeke Elliott is a number one, still one of those candidates for you got to pay him, because he's that big of a difference maker. The Packers did themselves a huge favor by not having to worry about and game plan for him for 60 minutes. Because, you know, like I said, if they did, I can only imagine how much differently this game goes and what it comes down to in the end.
Yeah, Zeke finishes the day 12 carries for 62 yards. That's good for 5 yards a clip. But again, it wasn't game altering the way Jordan Howard and Miles Sanders were a week and a half ago when they took on the Philadelphia Eagles. And largely because they were able to jump out to that lead that you mentioned. And one of the reasons for that is because you mentioned Jair Alexander having a tough day. But that's how the game started. Was the Packers, their first drive, they don't go down the field and score, so they punt. Give the Cowboys a chance to establish their game, and it looks like the Cowboys are going to walk right down the field. They hit Amari Cooper on a big play-action pass. They have a couple runs to Zeke, and then Dak Prescott throws behind Amari Cooper, and Jair Alexander gets an interception, and that became a theme of the day and really a theme for this defense in general. Last year, the discussion was how the Packers were unable to get enough turnovers, And this year, the defense is a turnover machine. Save for the one game against Philadelphia, they have turnover, multiple turnovers in every game except for the first game against the Chicago Bears. And they had the big interception to seal that game. So I don't think this Packers defense is like one of the three best in the NFL, but they're very good. And they're able to play you in a variety of ways. They can take the ball away, but they can also force you to punt, and they can control games that way. Mike Pettine very much playing into the role of he doesn't care about yardage because the Cowboys were able to roll up yards like they were nobody's business. And some of that was because the Packers played a little bit differently after they built their big lead. But starting with the interception of Jair Alexander, and then you've got the Smith brothers getting into the action. Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith both have big third down sacks. And that's where I want to go now because Jason, Ray Lewis says during the week that the Packers have no leadership in their front seven. And that's why they had problems against the Eagles. And Za'Darius Smith said something about it on Twitter. And that got some reaction. And then he sacked Dak Prescott and mocked Ray Lewis. And I hate Ray Lewis. And I can't express that enough. I think he's a blowhard. I think that he talks too damn much. And he loves the sound of his own voice more than anyone ever. And then you add in that he just goes on television and spews this ridiculous bullshit about the Packers defense that has no truth to it whatsoever. And he wouldn't even know. It's one of my biggest peeves whenever somebody talks about leadership when they're not in the locker room. How the hell do you know who the leader is and who's not? Well, Za'Darius gets a sack and then mocks the Ray Lewis dance. And I giggled like a little schoolgirl when that happened. It was hilarious. Jason, any thoughts on that specific play or the comments from the blowhard in general?
Well, soon enough, you will actually have a schoolgirl. Well, many years from now, you'll actually have a schoolgirl. So, you'll be able to know exactly what that sounds like is the point that I'm trying to make. No, I mean, obviously, again, this is a great illustration of media today. You know, guys are just former players are just assuming that because they played at one point in time, they are the authority on what's happening based on what they see on TV in a game, on a TV telecast. Well, just because you played football doesn't automatically make your IQ higher. You don't have any better way of dissecting what's going on the sidelines and what's happening with the team than I do. And I'm not trying to, you know, compare myself to Ray Lewis, nor do I want to. I don't have the same issues with him that you do. There's a lot of varying opinions on him, but, you know, once again, here you have a guy who hasn't played in a long time. He's trying to assess something, and, you know, who knows? You know, Za'Darius Smith had ties to the Ravens. He might know Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis might have said that on purpose. It might have been a work by the two of them for him to make a comment and Za'Darius to help fire up his team because Ray made some comment. Who knows? You know, all that stuff really doesn't make any difference. All that matters is results. Za'Darius Smith, two sacks on the day. Great Ray Lewis impression. Preston Smith, a third sack on the day. Meet at the quarterback, the two Smith brothers. They were featured on Fox before the game, the Aaron Andrews interview. You know, I kind of got nervous, Jake, because last year, remember when HaHa Clinton Dix got traded to the Redskins and he and DJ Swearinger, they had their interview that they did and they were going to be the best safety duo in the league. And I mean, they didn't last
more than half a season together. They're both on different teams. One of them doesn't even have a job now.
Half a game.
He's Springer's free agent.
Half a game, really. I mean, it was pathetic. So I kind of was like, oh, is it going to be the curse of the pregame interview? But the Smith brothers really brought it today after they were kind of held in check against the Eagles. And that was obviously very important because the one thing you want to do is you want to take advantage of a weakness in your opponent. So no Tyron Smith. Lyle Collins played, but he was clearly hampered. He came out a couple times in this game. So your two tackles are not at 100%. And Mike Pettine was able to take advantage of it. Adrian Amos had a nice sack or a nice blitz and was able to affect the quarterback. You know, I thought Pettine did a really, really good job of getting a lot out of the guys that were out there. And I hope that one of the effects of what you saw from Will Redmond and Shannon Sullivan was coaching. That the coaching on the defensive side of the ball is now going to be an X factor. It's now going to be something that's going to help elevate guys and get more out of them or put them in position to make great plays. But the other thing about Z, is this guy a warrior or what? He came out of this game three times and returned. I mean, he's down on the turf. He's smiling. He's obviously got a knee or an ankle injury. He comes off the field. He goes back on the field. I don't know, Jake. Players working their way back into the game. It sounds like he convinced the medical staff to let him play against the Eagles, even though they said don't play. You know, it's one thing to be out there and be effective, but when you're out there and you're not effective, that's another story. Za'Darius Smith was obviously able to do a lot of things, but I wanted to get your take on him begging his way back in the game. I think your answer is going to be pretty predictable here because it's going to be, listen, if he can play and he can be effective, I want him out there. But what about the mental job that he finally did? Finally, we see some edge from this defense. Za'Darius Smith is going after Dak Prescott and just kind of talking to him after the play, not getting penalties, not getting any of that kind of stuff. He did have one, I think, unnecessary penalty during the game, and he had the hands to the face, and those aren't things that you want to see a lot of. But he definitely, if he didn't get a third or a fourth sack today, he might as well have, because he was living rent-free inside the head of Dak Prescott. Those two were jawing at each other, going back and forth. Those are the kinds of things I think I'd like to see more of from the Packers, where they gain a little bit of that mental edge, you know, play right up to the line, but obviously don't cross that line. You don't want to cost your team yards or valuable points or anything like that. But that was something else that I want to give Z a game ball for, because finally there's that edge. If it was Ray Lewis having to call him out, you know, you can hate Ray Lewis, but we can love that coming out of it.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I read early in the week about how he wanted to play because he said he's the leader of the defense, so I have to be out there kind of thing. If he's good to go, he's good to go. But at the same time, it's nice to see that, to hear those stories, to see that the guy, I mean, I've always said the best players on your defense are the ones who have got to be the leaders. The best players on your team are the ones that have got to be the leaders. And for Za'Darius Smith to basically say, I'm the guy, to take that onus on himself. Some guys in the past have shied away from that. Za'Darius Smith is clearly not going to be one of those guys. And I'm thrilled about that. And the edge that he's brought, you know what? I said after the interception, Za'Darius Smith goes nose to nose with Dak Prescott, and I'm smiling and laughing and clapping at the TV like, yeah, that's awesome. This defense is good. This defense is cocky. This defense has that edge to it. And you know what? All the great ones did. So I don't know if the Packers defense is destined to be one of the all-time greats, or a great defense, just not even all-time, but just a great defense in general. I don't know if that's their destiny, but what I do know is that they have the attitude of one of those defenses. So that was very nice to see. Preston Smith, again, another really good day. Kyler Fackrell had some pressures. Rashawn Gary made some plays. He got called for a ridiculous roughing the passer penalty on a play where the quarterback didn't even throw the ball, so it doesn't make any sense to me. And unfortunately, Jason, that's becoming one of the themes, I think, over the first 5 weeks of the season. The NFL officials don't have a clue. I think there's way too many rules. I think there's way too many things that are open to interpretation. I think there's way too many things that are open for review. And ultimately what's happening is these games are over-officiated, and it's taking away from the game. The pass interference penalty, predictably, is horrendous. And coaches don't, I mean, I haven't seen personally, and again, I may have missed a couple, but I have not seen pass interference called on a play that is challenged. And I'll ask the same question I asked last week. If you're going to change the way that you can call pass interference to where it's reviewable, then not change any of the calls that look obvious, then what the hell was the point of putting in the review? It's just a waste of time. Then you've got every time the quarterback gets breathed on, it's pass interference. They called Maurice Hurst today in the Bears game for a penalty because he sacked Chase Daniel. He's hitting Chase Daniel as he lets the ball go, brings him to the ground like he would tackle him. The ball is intercepted, and it's negated by a roughing the passer penalty. Very similar to the play Clay Matthews was called for a year ago against Minnesota. Then you've got Rashawn Gary, who grazes the helmet of Dak Prescott on the way by, and he's roughing the passer. It's ridiculous. And I, for years, have strived not to be this guy. But that being said, if this is what we're going to do with quarterbacks, put freaking flags on them. Red jerseys, whatever. But I think what has happened, and I tweeted about this early in the week, we don't need more reviews. We don't need more anything like that. What we need is the NFL competition committee is a bunch of suits that are deciding how they want the game to be officiated. And they either didn't play football or haven't played in so long that they've forgotten what it's like. And what happens with that is the game changes. And it has. Guys, NFL fans or NFL competition committee, I beg of you, you put these rules in to protect the quarterbacks because you don't want to see you don't want to see Luke Falk against Matt Barkley. And guess what? Those games still happen. regardless of what your rules are. So don't make them as ridiculous as they are. Let football players play football. It's a violent game. It's that way for a reason. There's way too many games where the story at the end is the officials. We talked about a non-call pass interference for weeks. Do you know how long, Jason, do you know how long that probably would have been discussed if PI wasn't reviewable? I'd bet you it wasn't 10 days.
Right.
It would have died down. It would have waited. It would have had its day and like, oh, was that pass interference? But the reason we talked about it longer is because of the way the game is officiated now. So with that in mind, Jason, I give you the floor. You've watched the game for much, 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 much longer than I have because you're about 40 years older than I am. But just kind of give me your thoughts on the state of today's game and the officiating.
42 years older, to be exact. So it's bad. I mean, it's obviously bad. All the cliches. You don't want the officials to be the star of the show. That's not what we're there to see. We're there to see the players play and make plays and entertain us. And that's what the storyline should be, but it's not the case. And what's scary about it is, and I've said this several times, is that if you are the fan of a team that's going to make the playoffs this season or any season in the future, as far as we can see, you better be really nervous about how your team's season is going to end, because it could come down to a call that is or is not made. And do you want that? Just ask the Saints and their fans how that turned out last year. The NFL does not care. They will make a mistake. They will let it live. They will let it stand. They will double down on it like they did with Clay Matthews the first couple weeks of last season and then admit that they made a mistake. But by the time they do, it's too late. You've already lost games. You've already lost playoff seedings. You've already lost a chance to go to the playoffs. Coaches are getting fired. Players are losing jobs. All kinds of fallout from the referees making mistakes. And if you're going to, if you have the technology, use it and get it right. But if you can't get it right, then you got to ditch it. And we can go back to the days where the referees just make a simple call on the field and we'll get frustrated by it because TV has only gotten more and more slowed down. It's only got more and more on the field. I mean, we feel like we're there anymore with these angles that the camera gives us. We're able to slow plays down so much that we can see, you know, the when players hit the ground, we can actually see like they're, you know, their pants wrinkling and little things going on. I mean, so you know exactly where the ball should be. You know exactly where the ball was when a knee was down. But, you know, if the refs can't get it right, then we might have to just live with the fact that the refs biffed it and there is no replay and there is no way to fix it or to solve it. You know, I say that and then I think immediately back and flash immediately back to the playoff game in San Francisco when Jerry Rice fumbled. And there was no replay to overturn that and get that right. So it's the double-edged sword. But you don't want these games coming down to a call. And that's why there was a horrible pass interference against Marquez Valdes-Scantling at the end of the Eagles game. But you know what? The Packers also had two opportunities, first and goal, to get in the end zone. And they didn't the first time. And unfortunately, it ends up they don't the second time because the penalty isn't called. We don't know what would have happened. And Davante Adams was not in the game. Okay? They had a huge lead against Dallas. If you just simply don't let up and you don't let the other team score and you make a tackle instead of going for a pick, or you don't get beat deep, or you stay in your lane, or you do the four or five things, because play, you know, games come down to what, Jake? 7, 8, 9 plays maybe in a game that really make a huge difference, maybe less. If you handle business on those, and I get that the other side is paid to make plays and they're pros too, then you don't put yourself in position to let the referees rip the game away from you and rip your heart out. And it's really, really unfortunate that that's the case. But we also have to give them credit at some point too, because you've got Jason Garrett on the sideline, not abiding by the rules of where you stand and how far behind the sideline you stand. He keeps pushing it, jawing at the ref. Finally, he gets so upset, loses his head. He wants to challenge a call. And he does it in a very disrespectful way, slams the challenge flag down, clearly must have said something to the official, and then gets flagged and costs his team yards. So, you know, at times they come through for us and they do catch it. And then there's other times where they don't, a.k.a. Derek Barnett getting flagged for a personal foul but not being ejected from a game because of a hit that he makes that, you know, there was some debate whether or not he should have gotten ejected. I personally don't think so, but you know, that's the nature of the game. It's judgment calls, but don't take the power of the referees away. Score, 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 so that it doesn't matter in the end. That's obviously easier said than done, But Jake, I don't know what else you're going to do to prevent your season from ending in disaster because it was decided by a zebra.
I think there are measures that could be taken. The NFL is a billion-dollar business. No need for these officials to have other jobs. Hire full-time officials. And when they're not officiating football games, they're training to officiate football games. And I get it. Teams are bigger. Players are bigger. They're stronger. They're faster than they ever have been. And it's hard. I know it's a hard job. But I don't think the NFL is doing everything it can to prevent these sorts of things. And I think that, and I don't really have a problem with most of the time how the officials are calling things, because that's the way they're told to call them. Like, I will bet you that tomorrow in their film room, the Mo Hurst play that I'm talking about, or the Rashawn Gary play that I'm talking about, roughing the passer, they're going to say, yep, that's the right call. That's the way we want to do it. And that's a problem. That can't be this way. Football is a violent game. It is. It's not for the faint of heart, and it needs to stay that way, because that's the reason that we love it. One of the many reasons that we love it is that it is a violent game. But not only that, you're making it almost impossible to play defense. And I've never been that guy, but for the last year and a half or so, I'm right there, because it's asinine the way that they expect these pass rushers to defy physics and not land on the quarterback. I just can't do it. I sincerely hope, even though I know that's not going to happen, that the NFL will continue to do what it does, and we'll keep watching. That's the other reality, is this show exists because of that. And football really is such a great game before the NFL gets in the way. And that's the way I really think it's best summed up. Let's move away from the officials, because it was a story of this game. It is not the story of this game. Obviously, there are plenty of things that happen. It's the Packers and the Cowboys. That's a big deal. Let's talk about the receivers and the Packers, because this really was a game, a chance for them to seize an opportunity, step up, show that they're capable of being a playmaker, a consistent playmaker for this offense. And the receivers as a whole finished with 4 catches for 55 yards and no touchdowns. Now, the Packers didn't throw for any touchdowns at all, but I don't know. There was a lot of chatter, and it seems like people are kind of on both sides of this, Jason. Some people say, oh, no, let these guys develop. These receivers are fine. Let them develop. They don't need to trade for a receiver. They don't need to add anybody. They're fine. There are other people, like myself, who think that the Packers going into the season the way they did was something that could potentially bite them. And it appears that it is. This Packers, guys, if the season ended today, and it doesn't, if the season ended today, the Packers would be the 3 seed in the NFC as NFC North Division champions. If the 49ers lose tomorrow night, they would be the 1 seed. That's what that means. This team is a contender. Now, I'm not sure how good I think they are just yet, but I do know that you cannot afford to let this season go and not give yourself the best opportunity to win a championship and not adding a second receiver. Because here's the thing, guys. Marquez Valdes-Scantling is fine as your team's third option as wide receiver. Geronimo Allison, Jake Kumerow, players like that, Darius Shepherd, are fine as back end of the receiving room type of options. They're not consistent playmakers. They're not. The Packers need somebody who is much more consistent. I've brought up names in the past. I don't know who's available or what will be available and when and all that sort of stuff. But what I do know is this team cannot afford to go through the rest of their season where, again, yes, the Packers won today. They scored 34 points. That's awesome. I'm thrilled. Not going to be sustainable. They're a really good team. Because just say, for example, they play everything goes great. They play the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl. You know what Bill Belichick's going to do? He's going to take Devontae Adams away and say, these other guys have got to beat us. The teams that have beaten the Patriots are the ones that have had other guys to beat them. When the Packers beat them in 2014, Jason, you and I were there. We remember. At first, he was taking away Jordy, and then he took away Randall Cobb. And you know what happened? A guy named Devontae Adams had the best game of his career that day. Packers need somebody else. It's plain and simple to me. I'm not going to say to not acquire, because it takes two to acquire. And for example, if Gutekunst keeps calling an offering for Emmanuel Sanders, then John Elway keeps saying no. It's not really going to matter whatever Brian Gutekunst does in that case, because the offer, if you will, was there. But to not attempt to upgrade your receiving core at this point, that's negligence, I think. And the lack of offensive weaponry should not be a reason this team doesn't have a chance to make a run at a championship. Jason, we've talked about this a little bit. Any change of thoughts after today?
No, I mean, just saw a graphic Zach Cruz put up on Twitter that wide receivers were only targeted 12 times today and they only had four catches. So that means running backs and tight ends, if you take those out of the equation, you know, Aaron Rodgers, he was only 20. He only threw it 34 times. He only completed 22 passes. Only four of those were to wide receivers. The receivers had a brutal day today. You know, Geronimo Allison had two catches. Marquez Valdez-Scantling had one catch. Jake Kumerow had one catch. That's it. The rest of them went to running backs and tight ends. You know, Trey Carson had more catches in his first action after being signed from the practice squad earlier this week than any receivers did. So, listen, take what the defense gives you, and Aaron Rodgers did a good job of that, and thank God. I mean, he completed a pass today with his left hand. You know, he was doing some very Favre-esque things, finally taking what he could, throwing the short pass, throwing the dump off, and Aaron Jones was all too happy to take that ball and do some fun things with it. But part of the function of that is guys that can get open and that can make plays, and they're just they're not there. And there were a couple of long passes Valdez-Scantling could have had the ball been placed in a different spot. And I think he and Rodgers are going to get it down to where Rodgers, you know, he knows the timing of when he can throw the shot play. When Valdez, I mean, Scantling gets behind the defense at least once a game. And I think when 12 starts to get real comfortable with that, I think he'll get on in terms of, okay, throw it, the depth, the distance, the speed. He'll start to hit on that. And that's going to be another 6 points that you'll see the Packers score every week. And if that's the one thing that MVS does every week, that's great. But I still hope, you know, it was kind of a bummer. I look around the league at some of the teams that have receivers that, you know, teams that aren't doing well this season that have pieces that they might be looking to trade away or they might be looking to use as a bargaining chip to reload. You know, teams like Denver, we've heard Emmanuel Sanders' name said 1,000 times. Denver, unfortunately, beat the Chargers this week. So do they get a second wind and think that they can make a push and keep Sanders instead, or does that drive the price up? You know, if they can improve their team, I have to trust that Brian Gutekunst is looking at every option now. The previous regime might have been a different story, because once the season started, it was like you could put a lock. You know, it was almost like playing Madden with no roster moves available. You put a lock on that roster, and that's what you got. That's what you play with the rest of the season. And if anybody gets hurt, then you better have some really good duct tape and bubble gum to put them back together. But the receiving situation is it's not as ideal. But I will also say this. Listen, they beat a good team on the road in the Cowboys. If they're able to go into Kansas City and go into Los Angeles and they play well against or beat the Chiefs and or the Chargers with what they've got, and this formula is working, as much as we would like to see more flashy names and things going on out there in the receiving game, it's going to be really hard for us to argue with what the team is doing. So it is still only week five, but the trade deadline ain't forever. I think teams have another 3 weeks. They've got until the end of October to make a move if they're going to. And once that's over with, the only chance you have is if a team releases a player and they clear waivers or you sign somebody off the street. So they better either be magical in coaching up the guys they've got, or they better be really working the phones hard and trying to figure out if they've got an opportunity here to get one small missing piece that could be the difference for this offense. And, you know, scoring another touchdown in a game like today, which then takes away a lot of the stress that they had to endure a little bit later in the game.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we'll see what happens. It looks like, Jason, that the trading deadline this year is on October 29th. So they've got some time yet. The Packers have 23 days if they want to make a move like that. We'll see what happens. I don't feel strongly one way or the other as to what they will do, but I do know that they need to try and do something, because they were hoping the young guys made a step. EQ is hurt. Jim on Moore got cut. MVS has been a deep threat, and he's had some nice moments. The rest of the guys are just guys. Geronimo Allison's just a guy. Darius Shepard's not. I mean, the Packers are more undrafted free agents than they do drafted. And I'll drive that point home for the rest of the year. They have some issues that need to be taken care of. One issue that they don't have, they got a running back. Aaron Jones had have a day, my friend. Almost 200 all-purpose yards, 4 touchdowns, and I loved him finding a camera after a second touchdown and shouting, "This is my house," into the camera. It was something special. Something else at the running back position, Jason, I'll kind of combine what I wanted your thoughts. Jamal Williams didn't play. Trey Carson was promoted from the practice squad on Friday night, and widely assumed that the Packers would have 3 running backs active, and they did not. Dexter Williams was not active. They went with Carson, who had a better camp. He's more reliable, assignment sure, all that stuff. Dexter Williams clearly more talented as a runner, but that appears to not matter all that much. So that was interesting to me, at least. But Aaron Jones is the story of this game. Like I mentioned, almost 200 all-purpose yards, 4 touchdowns, so many big runs, so many big plays, and even some of his okay runs were like great 4-yard runs where he made 2 guys miss. Leighton Vander Esch is going to be seeing 33 in his sleep for the next couple weeks. And Leighton Vander Esch is a good player. Troy Aikman was sure to point that out to you several times during this broadcast. Vander Esch is a good player. And Aaron Jones made him look rough for several different stretches of the game. Jason, we finally maybe see a glimpse of the idea that Aaron Jones could be a star. Is today a launching point for him to have a really good rest of the season?
Well, I thought his launching point was 2 seasons ago when Aaron Rodgers got hurt and he was breaking off big runs and he was the offense when they didn't have an offense when Brett Hundley was trying to lead it. So no surprise that he could have a day like today, but to have him step up and do it when there's no Davante Adams was very timely. And the football gods were very kind to the Packers on this day. 182 all-purpose yards, 7 catches, 75 yards, 107 yards on 19 carries, 4 touchdowns. One of the things that was a big complaint last season and even in 2017 was that the Packers would abandon the run. They would get away from the run. You never saw Aaron Jones' carry total get up to 19. We were lucky if it was over double digits. And there were times when in favor of whatever it is that the offense wanted to do last year, Aaron Jones would spend the entire fourth quarter or the entire crunch time portion of the game on the sideline while they ran with Jamal Williams, whoever else it was that they had back there. And the results were obviously what they were. 4 touchdowns in a game. Aaron Jones, lucky if he's going to reproduce something like that. I don't know what it is about Dallas. There is something really special about that building. That I know they talk about, when they build certain things on burial grounds or, stuff like that, and the juju and the spirits and all that other stuff that you have to worry about. But wherever they chose to build AT&T Stadium, I don't know if Vince Lombardi is secretly buried under that parking lot or what the scoop is, but there is a vortex when the Packers come to Dallas and the Cowboys just are not able to play great football long enough to win a game. So Aaron Jones, what a great day. I write the game balls and lame calls column at Cheesehead TV, which goes up on Monday first thing. But there's a couple pieces that go up after the games are over on Sunday. And one of the bummer things about that is that the images that are available to us to use for our articles, a lot of the really good ones are already taken. And I don't want to duplicate those, so I have to find something else to use. Now, I really wanted to find one that was a lot of fun of Aaron Jones, and I was desperately looking for one of him waving to the defensive back as he rounds the corner and gets into the end zone for his final touchdown on the day, which was really to help ice this game away. That was, again, we talked about the edge on defense and some of the mental things that the defense was able to do. How about the offense getting that swagger going on the road? Look, this is my house. This is my place. I have great games here. It was a phenomenal day. It was a phenomenal day for him to have. And again, he's not going to do this every week, but to have that confidence that he can find, he finally breaks a long run. He had a 22-yard run. He didn't have a 20-yard run up for the first 4 weeks of the season where it seemed like last year, once every 3 or 4 carries, he was breaking a long one. So he's a huge asset, huge part of this game and finally this team. And finally, an offensive coaching staff that is ready to use the running backs in the passing game and a quarterback that is willing. That is such a huge, huge, huge piece. And like I said, running backs today, they were targeted 13 times if you count Vitale. And so then they had 12 catches by a back today, in addition to everything that Aaron Jones did on the ground. Absolutely phenomenal. Jake, I know that you are a coach of sports, but I know that you love watching your Packers, and I know that you don't mind a little bit of swagger. We know that football is an emotional sport, but when you see Aaron Jones waving bye-bye to the defender, what is going through your mind if it wasn't hysterical laughter?
I love it. It's awesome. Sports are supposed to be fun, guys. The whole idea, it's competition. My dad always taught me that it wasn't bragging if you back it up. Well, Aaron Jones backed it up. You score 4 touchdowns in a game, do whatever the hell you want. Honestly, I don't think it matters. And that's something else about the NFL. We want to talk about officiating. Stop penalizing guys for celebrating. It is ridiculous. It needs to stop. But Aaron Jones specifically, I loved it. And I laughed and I said it as it happened. I was like, oh, he waved on the way in. That was awesome. I loved it. That's crazy that the Packers running backs were as prevalent as they were in the passing game. It was nice to see. Aaron Jones still not quite as smooth in the passing game as I would like, but he's gotten better, definitely, since he got into the NFL. He's a good passing game player now, where there was some benefit or some credence to the idea that he wasn't a good passing game player in recent years, which is one of the things that Mike McCarthy was criticized about. But there was at least some credence to that. Now, shouldn't have mattered as much as it did from McCarthy's last 2 years here, but that's the way that it went. But yeah, Jones was awesome today. I think.
Well, here was one other thing, Jake, I wanted to add too. It was the patience of Jones and just kind of waiting for things to open up and then bouncing it outside. Clearly the Packers saw something on film with the Cowboys defense that said, hey, we can get to the edge. And Jones did. He was able to take it outside and pick up his yards that way, where it's like when the Packers have tried to stretch so far this year, and again, they played some really good defenses in the first four games, they weren't able to do that. But this week they saw a weakness and they kind of attacked it. Jones getting out on the perimeter, that's the sign of a back that's coming into his own and is understanding where his yards can be had. Now, he did get stuffed in the backfield, tried to, you know, turn around and switch course. And I'm looking at Aaron Rodgers thinking to myself, don't you dare try to pull a Brett Favre and go low or try to take out a defender and end up getting hurt. But I thought one of the reasons why Jones was so successful was because he picked his spots really well. Either that or they drew it up and called some great plays, because finally the perimeter was working for Jones and the run game.
That it was. And something else that you guys love, for those of you guys that are into film and all that stuff, Elgton Jenkins is a damn brick. Be sure to watch that, because I am certain that he will show out well on this week's film. His cutback ability, Jones's cutback ability, his ability to put one foot in the ground and go, he's got some special traits. And we're finally able to see that today. Maybe playing some defenses that aren't towards the top of the league will be able to help some of that a little bit. But ultimately, the Packers win 34-24, Aaron Jones star of the day. They get interceptions from Jaire Alexander and Kevin King. And Shannon Sullivan had a really nice interception. Will Redmond had an interception that was negated by a penalty. They had a fumble recovery that was negated by a penalty. And then the game essentially ends. It's 34-24. The Cowboys are trying to kick a field goal. They false start, which moves them back 5 yards. And then Brett Maher misses the kick wide right, and that basically ends the game. So the Packers move to 4-1. They are 2-0 on the road. They are 2-0 in the division. Those are two places that they struggled immensely last year, which really was a sign of the end of the time for Mike McCarthy. But here they are, 4-1, moving into a Monday night game against the Detroit Lions. Jason, I don't want to break down Detroit tonight. I think we might be able to do something like that a little bit later in the week. But ultimately, I think you can agree with this when I say this. It's time. The Packers have not beaten the Lions in 2 full years, regardless of the fact that Aaron Rodgers hasn't started a lot of those games. Sometimes it's been Brett Hundley. Sometimes DeShone Kizer came in. Whatever. It doesn't matter. The Packers used to beat the Lions like a drum, and that was the easy. Those are the gimme division wins. The Packers are now 4-1, and they have a chance to be 6-1 going into two tough road games at Kansas City, who just lost to the Indianapolis Colts, so they are beatable there. That's nice to see, a little bit at least. And the Los Angeles Chargers, who lost to the Denver Broncos. That might end up being a pseudo home game for the Packers, but nonetheless, the Chargers are a talented team. They should be able to give the Packers some problem, but this is a big stretch. They're 4-1, they're at home. This is a game that I think a lot of us didn't expect them to win against the Cowboys, and they've got two games that I think are winnable with Detroit and Oakland in the next 2 weeks, and they're both at home. The hope is that they can get two wins there and go through and get back to really, top-level NFC contender status. Packers are a good team, guys. It may not look the way that we're accustomed to seeing. You know, the best teams under Mike McCarthy, for example, they had an opportunistic defense, but it wasn't one that could control games quite like this one can, and the offense would light up the scoreboard. This offense doesn't quite light up the scoreboard, but they do a lot of things well, which is more than we can say in recent years. So, Jason, any final thoughts real quick before we sign off here?
You will not be seeing a Detroit Lions kicker throwing a football in this game. I do hope, I'm going to tell you right now, I want to see the Packers get their first block of the season on that chunk that kicks footballs for the Detroit Lions. That's all I have to say. I don't know where the term chunk came from. I went with it. It came to my brain and I went with it. But it is absolutely time, and it is in Green Bay. Green Bay, I don't know if you're aware of this, at one point in time had a nearly quarter century winning streak at Lambeau Field against the Detroit Lions. It's time to start a new one. They've lost their two seasons in a row. Those circumstances were games in which Aaron Rodgers did not play the majority of or any of, and the season was over and there was nothing to play for. That is not the case any longer. So Matt Patricia and your pencil and Matthew Stafford and everybody else coming into Lambeau Field and Darius Slay, just want to remind you that's Lambeau, L-A-M-B-E-A-U, not L-A-M-B-O, the car. This year is going to be different, and you better bring your A game. That's all I got to say. Huge win against the Cowboys. Couldn't be more excited to be doing a victory podcast with you, Jake. I did not think we were going to be doing it. No surprise there. Upbeat lollipop. But a real simple, everyone have a great week and a go Pack go.
Yeah, I didn't expect to do one either. We did our predictions over at Packer Report before the game like we do every week, and I picked them to lose. So more than happy to be wrong. More than happy to eat that plate of crow right here live on YouTube television here. And happy all the way to be 4-1, especially after the way last season went with the Packers. They just weren't very good. And this team has some things that they're good at. So there's things to learn from. There's things to get better. But I think, if nothing else, this team has shown they can get better. They can bounce back. And I think that today, really my final thought is, I'm impressed with the coaching staff. And I say that because it would have been easy for the Packers. You know, they lost a tough game at home. They're going on the road for the first time since the early September against a Dallas team that's pretty good. And it would have been easy for them to fold up. Instead, especially without Adams, they've got hobbled players all over the place. This team has heart. They have desire. They have the traits of a team that looks to be buying in to what is being sold. So kudos in that regard to Matt LaFleur. Kudos to Mike Patton for putting together a game plan to stymie Dak Prescott and get the Packers to 4-1. So that's where we're at, and that's going to do it for this version of the show. Check out our YouTube channel. It's at youtube.com, Pulse of the Pack. It's our Pulse of the Pack logo right there in the middle. It looks like a big circle, just like what I'm doing here on the video. Not a photo of Aaron Rodgers. I am working. That is a channel from ages ago that I am working on getting discontinued as quickly as I can, but it's taking some time, so bear with me here. We're working on more software and things of that nature, so bear with me on the technical side of things as I requested, but it is getting better, I think, and I hope for you guys. Apologize we didn't have Jason on video tonight, although I see his face all the time, guys. It's really nothing special to look at. So it's probably a positive thing that he wasn't on video tonight. But overall, what really matters is that you check that out, the YouTube channel, you follow the channel at Packer Pulse, and then you follow all of our new teams. So me, I am at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason. He is at Jason Perrone. You can follow Tyler Grzegorik. He is our fantasy guy, at Tyler_Grez, and we are working on getting him on this week. So something you guys need to tell me is what you need to know from our fantasy football side of things. Who should we start? Who should we sit? What are some questions that you have? Sleepers, all that stuff. And then Team Degenerate. Matt Bove is at Matt Bove HS, although I will let you know between him and myself, there's going to be a lot of New York Yankees-related tweets here in the next several, hopefully several weeks. I know that Monday night is game 3 against the Twins, and then hopefully a series against the Houston Astros, and then hopefully the World Series. So we'll see how all that goes from there. But follow the entire team. Follow the podcast. Send us your comments, concerns, everything like that. But overall, we are more than excited to have you here with us. Thank you guys for listening to the Pulse of the Pack. And of course, as always, a 4-1 Green Bay Packers are led by the chant of Go Pack Go.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.